Welcome to the Excellent Archives, where we watch each and every episode of the 1996 CG cartoon, Beast Wars. I'm James.
I'm Dode.
And today we're going to talk about episode 16, The Trigger, part 1. Yes, this is our first two-parter since the opening. It aired on November 18th, 1996. It was written by show editor and our good friend, Bob Ford. Which is, wow, yeah, I did not realize this is the fourth out of 20 he's going to write. I know he's good. Kind of surprised that's only the fourth one, given how far we're in the series. So I think he must write more of them later, since there's a lot more plot in the later episodes. And
yeah, and I'm counting counting 20 because that counts one of the Primeval Dawn and a BotCon script that he BotCon exclusive script that he put out.
Ah, okay. But, and then directed by Jay Falconer, second episode of He Directs.
And the fourth of that one is going to actually be Transmutate, which apparently had three different directors.
Huh. It's interesting. I guess that we'll find out why on that. They do some interesting stuff. Like, I was recently reading up on one episode. I'll save it for the detail, but, like, where they actually store... It was such an important episode. Or I believe it was... I forget whether it was forward or Chillo actually ended up storyboarding it out, and it's the only episode of the show they actually storyboarded.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Anyways, this is, yeah, so with one of the story editors on it, is this is going to be a much more important episode than some of the others we've seen.
Before we open up, I think we should mention this. On the day we're recording this, is actually the, 20th anniversary of the first episode of season 2 of Beast Wars.
Yeah, no, I saw that. Well, we tweeted it, but yeah, it is weird. I mean, we're obviously not on season 2 just yet, but I figured it was worth mentioning since it's specifically, I would say, the day that we are recording, since we typically record on Thursdays, so 10/26 for those keeping score at home.
Yeah, I don't think we've said this since we started up. I think the second episode, maybe. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we record on Thursdays. I try to get the episodes up on Mondays. Sorry about this week. There's some personal drama going on. Sorry about last week. Sorry, what I meant. Yeah, so we try to get them up on Mondays. So that gives you about 2 days to listen and. Mm-hmm. Give us any, because we were trying to make sure you guys have time to talk to us about the next episode if you wanted. Not that anyone does.
Yeah. Well, we've gotten some likes. Maybe some people are listening.
No, we got some likes, but like, what you and I both agreed on this was, as listeners, we like there being a little bit of a space between the release of an episode and the recording of the next one, so that we can if we can watch the episode ahead of time and give a little bit of feedback.
Yep. All right. So anyways, so we open up on a snowy mountain where there seems to be some kind of avalanche, which pummels Tigertron a bit. It's almost as if it's rocks falling, since he's like, it's like, kind of reacts and says ouch and stuff as he gets hit. But anyways, he thinks this is strange, as it says that not this area isn't really known for volcanic activity, and like, what are the mysteries of this planet? But then decides to just shrug it off and goes and defile his weekly report. Where we then cut to the flyers, who have been noticing him in doing this, since Wasp and Eric is kind of like, Wasp Manager loves victims that are punctual. They've obviously been waiting for him to do this so they can catch him and blast him. Meanwhile, Tigertron heads to a kind of big laser projection array thing. I'm guessing this is like using the same sort of technology they used to contact Tigertron in the first place. Since like they mentioned, you know, long range communication is a problem. So it's actually kind of a nice bit of continuity. They say, how would Tigertron contact for base when he's like so far out? Oh, he uses a laser array thing.
Yeah, I think that's I was trying to get what Tigertron's first line of the show was, so I was looking at Ben's World of Transformers, hoping that the script was there. It was not. But yeah, no, so on the episode page of the Trigger Part 1 net page, the one question he has on there is, how would Tigertron be able to communicate? Mm-hmm. When I actually saw this giant laser array, I didn't realize it was a laser array. Mm-hmm. I was just like, wait, you shouldn't be able to see the communication wave like that.
Yeah. I mean, you shouldn't be able to see it even if it's a laser, but that's television for you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, you need to have some sort of visual storytelling. You can't just have it be a laser communications grid and not make it be seen.
Yes,
especially on a kid show.
Yeah. Anyways, we cut to the Axalon, where before Tiger Charlton's mentioned again, we get a small little scene where Franks is just doing some research into tidal anomalies and has a brief conversation with Primal, where he asks what if he found anything, and Rhinox reports that one of the moons seems to be missing a lot of mass, as if it is hollow? Question mark. Which seems very weird, and not that. Yeah, I'm sure this won't come up again later on in the series.
And for those of you who watch Cybertron, a hollow celestial body? Call Dr. Lucy Suzuki.
Yep.
For those who didn't watch Cybertron, there's a character in it named Dr. Lucy Suzuki, who has a conspiracy theory that the Earth is hollow and there's aliens living in it. And she's kind of right in the fact that the entrance to the place where she believes is an entrance into the Earth actually does have a giant hole with a bunch of those Decepticons I mentioned last time are living in it, but it's not completely hollow. So unfortunately, the evidence you found does support her theory.
Good thing, good thing she wasn't in Prime. I don't know how she would take finding out that the Earth is secretly Unicron. Spoilers for Transformers Prime, I guess.
That was a nice piece of mythology they added in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyways, we cut away from that scene, which doesn't get mentioned again. But just put a pin into it to remember by the time we get to the end. We get to Tigertron's message comes in and talks a bit with Rat Trap, who once again we're referencing Tom Jones. He says, "What's new, Pussycat? Any bread prowlers up there?" Just comments like, "Oh no, it's pretty peaceful up here in the north," before suddenly the flyers show up and start shooting everything. We get a slow motion dive before the pterosaur fires a blast that causes the array to fall on him, and we get perhaps the longest scream in fiction as Tigertron yells as it's falling down to him. You cut to the Axalon base, where Rat Trap tries to radio in, and the signal gets cut. And then we cut back to Tigertron, who's still screaming before it finally falls on him. It's a weird bit of editing.
There's a good at least 20 seconds where the signal gets cut, and Optimus heads out. And then we cut back. And then after the commercial, we cut back to Tigertron, and it's still falling.
Yes.
The only possible scream I can think of that was longer is in Austin Powers 1, where they're driving a steamroller and then the security guard just screams no, and they're like, "Get out of the way!"
God, didn't expect you to go there.
I don't know why. Mm-hmm. Is either that or that scene in Deadpool where the guy's getting about to get killed by a Zamboni.
Yeah. So anyways, we come back and the flyers laugh at crushing Tigertron, but he less crushed than they think as he pushes it off and starts firing back. And so they have a firefight as some mysterious clouds start to roll in. They seem very ominous. But we don't have time for that because Pterosaur fires a bullet bill.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He fires the bullet bill. Yeah. A red bullet bill. For some reason.
I'm not even joking. It has, like, painted on eyes and, like a shark mouth on it.
Yeah. It's seriously a bullet bill. But what's really funny is when he fires it and it lands in the ground, it seems to be a dud.
Yeah. It's just a little wisp, I'm smoking, like one of the elephants falls off.
Yeah, I was gonna say the only thing it's missing from to be a bullet bill is the little arms.
Yeah.
Yeah, the tail fins fall off, and then Tiger Chan just like stares at it as it falls apart, and then Waspinator decides to be useful for once and shoots it to make it explode.
Waspinator is very useful.
He is, but I'm just saying it's kind of seldom. He's very useful. When he is useful, he's extremely useful.
Yeah, so anyways, that causes an explosion that causes part of the cliff to start, causes the cliff to break off and fall down. Tigatron tries to outrun the falling cliff and leap to safely, but loses his grip and ends up falling down into the mysterious clouds that happen to be under him at this point. The flyers, like, basically high-five themselves, thinking that, like, they killed Tigatron, and go head down to find proof to bring back to Megatron. We also get a good line from Waspinator, like, Waspinator wants his head! Poor Pterosaur chases him, and he's like, it's my bug face! So they go flying into this, I cannot emphasize that it is kind of a weird cloud, only because, like, they never rarely animate clouds in this, so these stick out as pretty well, since they're, like, kind of dark and stuff. But we hear the sound of blast fire before there's an ominous charging sound and a flash.
I was going to say, this. If you want to know what this cloud looks like, it would fit in very, very... Speaking of bullet bills, it would fit in very well in Mario 64. Super Mario 64.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so then we cut back to the Axelon, where Prime radios him with bad news. He's stuck the... I guess the thing wasn't that badly damaged because he's put it back upright and using that to call in. We get a good line from Cheetah's like, what the sitch? Where's my fellow Catbot? And the first of many nick... Well, actually, no, it's the second nickname. Earlier Rat Trap referred Tigatron as Stripes. They give a lot of nicknames to him in this episode. You guys could just, like, pick one and stick with it.
They each have their own nickname for him.
Yeah. Yeah, but I'm pretty certain, like, Cheetah's going to use a different one. Anyways, Optimus says that Tigatron may have been destroyed as there is a dramatical music sting. Or we cut to commercial and then come back and Retro says, like, say it ain't so, Big Bot, not our Stripe Scout. Again, another nickname.
I think that was Cheetor that said that, though.
Yeah, that was still Cheetor.
No, you said Rattrap.
Oh, sorry.
I think. This is a really good Cheetor line. Say it ain't so, Big Bot, not our Stripe Scout.
Yes. Yeah.
Cheetor is worried about him like he's his little brother.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's kind of cute. Optimus says, like, it looks like that there was an attack from above, just looking at the remains. Dinobot says, like, of course, Waspinator and Air Pterosaur. And we get a good exchange where Roger's like, thanks for the insight, Dino Brain. You want your consulting fiend? No need. I'll simply extract it from your hide before Rhinox tells him to knock it off. And Rattrap just, like, blows a raspberry at Dinobot afterwards. Only problem is, if Tigatron's destroyed, where are the parts? Because Optimus can't find anything. But before we then cut over to the Preds, where you get, like, a nice overhead shot of the dark side, which zooms out, and you see a Peregrine Falcon, which is, of course, Air Razor, who uses, like, a kind of, like, zoom-in... has, like, telescopic vision, which I guess makes sense, because she turns into a hawk, and, like, if there's, like, one thing, like, you know about hawks from, like, reading, like, zoo books and Animorphs, it's, like, they have really good vision.
Some of them are based on movement, but other than that, yes. They have very good long-distance vision.
But anyways, she sees a extremely busted-up in Pterosaur and Waspinator approach and says, I love this line, either the grunge look is coming back, or those two ran into something hot. Was, like, grunge exist on Cybertron?
They were on Earth for the 90s. That's established.
Well, yeah, like the Autobots, like they wouldn't have been on there in the 90s. Air Razor, like, technically just got born like an episode ago. Maybe that's taught in history books.
Taught to who? The Transformers are never kids.
I don't know. Look, obviously, maybe there was like a grunge period on Cybertron.
Oh God, I don't want to see that. I can barely stand it in our world.
Mm.
Yeah, no, but I think I think grunge would just be basically in terms of design elements, what the original the original trilogy of Star Wars ships were to the prequels. Mm-hmm. Everything's kind of old and in disrepair.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which I feel like if there was a grunge period, that it would have to be after the war, because you're not gonna if you can help it, you're probably not gonna let everything get in disrepair during a war. That's just asking for trouble.
Yep. Anywho, the Flyers go for Megatron. Wonders like how the heck is like how did Tigertron blow you to heck and back, basically. When Terrace says it wasn't him, it was a monument, and we cue to a flashback where we go from Super Mario to Sonic the Hedgehog as Tigertron is hanging on the floating island. The Flyers try to attack him there, and we get to see this bit from the sound effects where they fire, where suddenly the camera draws back, and there's a big old obelisk, which then powers up and fires a beam and manages to blow away the Flyers in like one shot each.
But and off in the distance, you hear someone saying, "Don't mess with the Master Emerald."
Yes. We get an iris wipe to Pterosaur's eyes, where it's like, "It was horrifying," and just collapses. Megatron is, of course, not about to let the idea of a super weapon go to waste, when they could use it to end the Beast Wars, and sends and orders Scorponok and Black Arachnia to go explore it. Black Arachne says, like, wouldn't it be better to figure out what it is and who made it before we, you know, try and take it over? But Megatron takes off. Which makes me wonder, like, Black Arachne does a lot more science stuff than her. I wonder if, like, her designation, you know, as a maximal protoform was to be a scientist, and this is, like, it kind of carrying it over. But she's, like, an assassin scientist because she got made evil as a Predacon.
Definitely she was a scientist before.
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of curious and salt to see if there's like any fiction to kind of speculate on, and there's nothing. Like, she doesn't appear in any of the comics. Like, they remember that she was a protoform and thus doesn't actually do anything. So this might just be my headcanon on, like, what Black Arachne's, like, original function was. I did see that apparently something tried to give her, like, a pre-Predacon name. What was it? Because I remember being especially ridiculous. They tried calling her... Oh yeah, previously known as White Propionica?
What?
Yeah, which is a type of bacteria. I don't know... I'll have to, like, look into it and see, like, why on earth they went with that, because that seems so random, and I don't want to research that on the show. So, yeah. Don't worry about that part.
Oh, yeah, but okay, yeah. White Propionica, sometimes utilizing the aliases Venus or Alita.
Yeah. Well, that gets into, like, other continuity, which we have a bit more to get into. Anyway, so, yeah. Megatron steps Black Arachne down and tells him to come on.
No, the alias Venus, that's her voice actor's name.
Oh, yeah. There is that. But yeah, before they leave, Megatron gives special orders to Scorponok, which we don't hear. We just hear, like, basically stage whispering as Black Arachne looks on in suspicion. But then we cut back to the Exelon, where Airazor is giving her report, and Optus and Rhinox are surprised about, like, how badly the Flyers got beat up. They say that it can't be Tigertron because he's against total destruction, which is a weird way of phrasing that. Dinobot, of course, says he's a fool for that, but that's Dinobot for you.
I mean, he's he's, I think he's like, they tried to make him a pacifist, but realized that wouldn't really work in a show called Beast Wars.
Well, they say like he'll only fight in self-defense, and he won't fight to. I assume like they mean like, oh, he wouldn't like, you know, fight to the death or something, but like, oh, it's a kids' show, so we got to say like total destruction.
Yeah, he'll defend himself. He'll just drive off the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
Like G.I. Joe, shoot around their feet till they run away.
When suddenly Cheetor literally leaps into the room and tells him that there's movement at Pred Central. And so Optimus sends an air razor out to Tail, Black Arachne, and Scorponok. And there's a bit of a conversation. I didn't write it down because it's just basically telling you stuff you already knew. We said, like, oh, well, is Tigertron alive? It's like, oh, if he is, he's going to be in a lot of trouble. But, like, the main part of it is that as Optimus is giving this voiceover, we see Tigertron climbing a cliff and seeing the obelisk in a tropical paradise.
James was just putting quotes around that.
Yeah, because while there's, I believe this is one of the more expensive episodes of the show, they kind of hit their limitation in this one part, where after a quick break, we come to a slow pan of nature and butterfly, but like, it's like very kind of sparse. Admittedly, it kind of looks a bit weird and alien, which maybe this could be intentional given what we're going to find out about this island. But like, Tragedy's like, oh, this is a land of wonders and like this tropical paradise that's managed to live in the Arctic. It's just like, oh, like, I think you're trying to oversell it a bit, buddy. I get that you like nature. But like, it doesn't look, I mean, maybe it does look a bit different from some of the stuff we see. Anyway,
I think by tropical, well, on limits of computer animation, tropical paradise in this case means everything is green, there's a bunch of vines everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the things, like, it's supposed to look prettier than, like, anything we've seen, but, like, it's kind of limited in what we got. But anyways, there's not much, we don't get too much pondering on the scenery before he walks past a rock which has a strange glyph, and then the ground starts to fall out from under him, and he realizes that this place is not without its defenses. And then also there's this, I'm not entirely sure how to describe them, because it's like weird, almost like kind of catapults, like hooked to rocks, but most of them don't throw it. They just like kind of try to slam against him. Eventually he takes off his gun and starts shooting, which then causes the obelisk to fire like its death beam at him. And he manages to get out of the way. But at this point he realizes like, oh, this thing reacts when you shoot. He says, let me be a visitor and not an invader, and transforms into beast mode. Well, speaking of invaders...
Before we get there, Tigertron was in beast mode when the vine started attacking him, so I don't understand why this worked now.
Well, no, he was... No, it wasn't him being in robot mode that got it. It was him shooting that triggers the thing.
No, but yeah, the trigger is the obelisk. But right. The vine started attacking him when he just walked by. He was in, so I don't get why going back into beast mode actually like stopped him from getting attacked again.
I don't know if that's why he does it. It's like, well, if I'm not going to be shooting anyways, I may as well be in. You know, he's trying to like blend in. It's like I don't want to be an invader, so I'm going to be a tiger. And yeah, obviously that. It's like, well, he could still trigger another. Basically, it's a booby trap, as we'll find out in the next episode. So I guess he tries to be a bit more careful.
All right. Well,
it's Tigertron. His deal is like nature and stuff. It makes sense.
It just he's doing the exact same thing he was doing when he first got attacked.
Mm-hmm.
I'm chalking it up to just plot holes.
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, it's not really like a plot hole for him to decide to transform back into tiger mode. He does that all the time anyway.
It's not a decision. It's the fact that it works.
We don't see him, like, go past another glyph and it doesn't identify him. As far as we know, he just avoids other ones.
He didn't even know there was a glyph. It was on the other side of the rock. He didn't see the glyph.
Maybe he sees the next one. You're getting hung up on this.
Anyways, that's why I was letting it go. I'm like, we'll probably be honest with a lot for a long time if I don't let it go, which is why I'm letting it go.
Okay, anyway, speaking of invaders, Black Arachne and Scorponok show up on the north, and they see the cloud. And briefly makes fun of, like, yeah, like, Wasp and Terrasaur are terrible at giving description, but yeah, this seems about the right thing. So Scorbunok decides to scout, and he uses his Cyrebee. Like, I honestly forgot that he uses this again.
I don't remember Cyrebee at all, so...
Yeah, no, it was in Guerrilla Warfare. Remember he didn't deliver the virus?
Not what I meant. Not what I remember the Cyrebee from Guerrilla Warfare. What I mean is, I don't remember the Cyrebee from when I was a kid.
Uh-huh.
And not having the toys, I would not remember it. Because it's two episodes so far.
Yeah, that's two more than I thought. I thought it was just the one. But anyways, he uses it to scout, where I guess he can fly it by wire, and he gets a visual of like it floating around the island and seeing the obelisk, and then seeing nature. Then, oh, he sees a Tigertron who like knocks it out of the air. So they realize that, oh, the Maximal's there first, so we need to get out there as possible. So Black Ranger transforms and uses her grappling gun to shoot as it goes overhead, which is like, man, that thing's got to have, like, good range to, like, get from the ground and up to this, you know, floating island. I know I keep saying floating island, but, like, it's literally what it is.
Yeah, we don't know what else to call it.
Yeah.
Like, that's really the only descriptor we have for it.
Airazor shows up. Airazor shows up and sees them flying, and like, then comments like, "It seems like weird that Black Arachne would grapple a crown, and even weirder that actually seems to be working." And decides to follow them, but Scorbunok actually sees her and readies a missile. Dun dun dun. Anyways, Tigertron. So cut to Tigertron, who still has like basically has the bee pinned under a paw, and figures out that. With the bees here, predators are not far behind. Realizes he could actually use the bee, and basically pulls a wire out of it. And then cut back to the Predacons as they finish climbing up. Scorbunok turns around and fires a homing missile, which like goes on a long arc and blasts Airazor out of the sky, causing her to fall down to the island.
It took a really long time to fire that missile.
Yeah, no, it like goes around, does like a long, slow curve before it gets Airazor. I guess it's like to approach from her line of vision. I mean, like Airazor, you're good, but like you didn't do a really good job tailing and not being seen. I mean, I guess it's kind of hard to miss like a giant peregrine falcon.
Hmm. Also, at the same time, I feel like the Prez would probably be shooting almost every animal they see. That they know is one of the maximal beast modes.
Well, they know how many maximals they are. This isn't an animorph situation where like they could be animals. You know, it's like we know like we have this list of animals they could be, and most of them are giants or like weirdly outsized versions of animals. So it's a bit easier to see. It's not like they have to like shoot every rat. They just shoot the one giant rat that talks with a Brooklyn accent.
Well, true. However, Airazor actually does make bird noises. And honestly, we're not totally sure if she is a giant peregrine falcon, because she seems to be about the same size as the thing they scan for beast mode.
But, I mean, no, it's not. Like, peregrine falcons are, like, small birds. Like, she is...
Modern peregrine falcons, A, and B, is an alien world as far as anyone knows.
I'm pretty certain we got something with a falcon to show it to scale, that it is not, in fact, a giant falcon.
A giant falcon is just a hawk.
Uh-huh. Yeah, anyway.
But in all seriousness, the only difference between hawks and eagles is the size.
You know
that?
Yeah. Anyway, because Scorbunok fired a missile, the obelisk fires at them, and... blast them, although doesn't send them that far. Well, we get the great line from Scorbunok, "Wow, that's a real blaster." Which, if Black Arachne had visible eyes, because is you could probably see them rolling at that. So it's like, look, obviously, it fires when we do something, so we should be careful not to fire. And then she says, "Like, we must take over it carefully," which is a nice save there, Black Arachnia.
Yeah, her inner spider is showing through for the first time.
Yeah, and Scorbunok eyes her with suspicion, and we get like the spooky music sting. And then we cut back to Tigertron, who, well, specifically cut back to Ares, who wakes up with Tigertron over her, who catches her up on the plot and says, oh, don't, like, you're damaged, but don't worry, if you stay in beast mode, you can repair yourself. Which is, I think, is this the first time they established that, or is this, like, always been a thing, where just like, yeah, if you hang around in beast mode, you'll get repaired?
That was episode one or two, actually, because after that initial fight, they're on the Maxwells are back, are on the way back to base, and Optimus says it'll take time for a beast mode to affect repairs.
Oh yeah, okay, I forgot about that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it makes sense. I guess like they can heal like regular injuries and not like traumatic stuff like what happened to Pterosaur and Waspinator.
You know, I honestly thought, because I noticed they're only showing her face.
Yeah.
I thought, like, she's got a giant hole in her chest and they just don't want to animate it.
Oh, no. She's not that busted up.
I mean, that missile looked like it took, like, it got her right in the chest, so.
Yeah. And then they get ready to head to the obelisk, and Tigertron says, like, where she ends up, I think, getting on his back, so you have, like, a weird scene of, like, a giant falcon on top of a tiger.
I think that's next episode.
I thought there was a scene of that, but that's not important. He basically, the important thing he says, oh, by the way, I reprogrammed that cyber bee and sent it back to base. And then we get to base where they have, like, the squirming cyber bee. And Optimus come like, is like, well, it's a good thing you didn't shoot it out of the sky, Cheater. And she was like, oh, yeah. So it's like, I would have, but, like, I saw it had one of Ares' feathers. It's like, yeah, I'm not dumb. And then before Rat Trap blows his fun, says, like, yeah, he missed. Which is like, yeah, that too.
Well, yeah, Cheetor says, like, well, I would have, but, you know, it had one of Ares' feathers. Then Rat Trap's a little nicer this time. He says, like, yeah. Also, he missed.
Yeah. Yeah, so then they order to get a video from Tigertron, which basically tells them that everything's like, hey, I found this floating island. It's got, like, this death laser thing, but all the Breds are here, so we need to get here first. Otherwise, like, disaster will happen. Oh, no, he specifically says, they could win the Beast Wars! Bum, bum, bum.
And this is, like, the most fisheye lens thing in this entire show. So much so that on the wiki, did you see the caption for this photo?
Oh, yeah.
All right, so it just says... Caption for this photo of Tiger for the video that Tigertron made. If you want ordering Gotham, Batman must take off his mask and turn himself in. Oh, and every day he doesn't, people will die. Starting tonight.
Look, Adobe Premiere was a heck of a drug back in '96. And so that's the episode. It ends with a preview, like, showing a lot of dramatic scenes, and honestly, like, I feel like they kind of give away a lot of the episode. Coming up, so we won't talk about it in detail.
Well, I mean, the part about the one thing I will talk about it is Optimus seems very panicked, and yeah. I think it's meant to give you the impression that the Predacons did get the weapon.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, anything about the episode?
There's a lot of good mystery, you know, kind of mystery. It's just like, We finally get back to, like, the alien, you know, what's up with this planet, get this mysterious thing. We kind of get Black Arachneo, once again, kind of getting more characters in the story, we kind of, like, weaselly. But, like, it's mostly set up, because, again, it's a two-parter. You're not going to get the really cool stuff until part two.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's a good episode, even if you're just, like, even if you don't get the payoff for what's been set up just yet.
Yeah. So this seems like an episode that, because the multi-parters in Beast Wars are, like, very important to the overall storyline. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure pretty much everyone watching, listening to this, and you remember this episode. I don't remember very well.
I'm going to say this without looking it up, but I'm pretty certain all the multi-part episodes are written by Ford or DeTillo or some combination thereof. Again, I'm saying that without checking.
No, I feel like the last few weeks we've mentioned some of the multi-parters. And they're not, they weren't by Forward or Detail.
Well, there were some directors. I don't know. We'll find out if I'm wrong when we get it, when we get to the other episodes.
Yeah, and if you're wrong, you have to, I don't know, eat a hat.
Why a hat?
I don't know. Eat your hat is a thing. Mm-hmm. Anyways.
All right, we need to write the second one. So this time, write for that part.
Okay. Mm-hmm. You said you wouldn't check.
I figured I could at least look at the next episode. I'm not looking through every multi-part episode.
Okay. Yeah, so I don't... this is pretty much a setup. I like that we got a lot of development for Black Arachnia, Tigatron, and Airazor in this one. Mm-hmm. Even though, like, most of Black Arachnia this only comes from her interactions with Scorponok and mm-hmm. the fact that she kind of wants some power.
Yeah. I guess it kind of continues where I wonder if, like, I obviously always remember the Flyers getting pinned together because they're the Flyers. Like, I wonder if, like, are they trying to, like make a ground squad of, like, Black Arachnia and Scorponok? I don't know how many more times we'll get them paired up, but, like this, we've at least gotten, like, two episodes of them doing this because they were paired up last episode, too.
I feel like the only person you could put together... honestly, if you pair Scorponok with anyone but probably Waspinator, he's just going to be insufferable because everyone else on the entire team, like, just did not like Megatron. He's Megatron stooge.
Yes.
Yeah. So I think that's all we seem to have for the episode recap. So we don't, because there wasn't really one spotlight character, so we're not doing a character spotlight this week.
Yeah. I mean, we could.
Nor do we have.
Yeah. I mean, like, there are some we could know, but, like, it makes sense to, like, see where the payoff to, like, know what we're talking about. Like, I know, Black Arachnia, like, minor spoilers, Black Arachnia is going to get to do a lot of stuff in the next episode. But it would make more sense to talk for her in the actual next episode.
Yeah, I did get to see a picture of her doing some stuff, and all I gotta say is she kind of looks like Lord Zedd on his throne.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. So nothing from the Golden Disc either. So I guess we're moving on to MVPs.
Yeah. So shoot, I forget. Do I go first or you go first in this
one? So since it's an even number episode, so you started, so that means that I go first for the MVP.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I guess I'm going to have to give it to Tigatron because he kind of sets the events of the episode in motion.
Uh-huh. Yeah, no, that's a good choice.
Yeah, that's really my only reasoning.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, you get a lot of good bits. You know, we get, like, kind of establish this character of, like, being more in tune with nature, like him being, you know, him being, I want to say the lone wolf, but, like, that doesn't work. He's a tiger.
Well, tigers are solitary creatures, actually, so it still would work.
Yeah, and he was almost a wolf, I guess, technically.
What do you mean?
Well, like, they originally, we mentioned this before when he first showed up, they originally wanted to put Wolfang in the show.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm. That would have been cool.
Yeah. But money is a thing.
Yeah.
I'm gonna give mine to Black Arachnia. She was the go-getter. She, you know, got on top of the island. I'm mostly doing it because I know how the second part ends, and, like, so you get, like, the seeds of her just like I'm totally gonna betray you. Oh wait, did I say that aloud? Nope. I'm loyal to Megatron.
She needs her own little, like, maniacal cackle, just so she can be even more of a female equivalent to Tarantulas.
Yeah. Well, when you're a Black Widow spider, like, people go, speaking of which, if we do a spotlight on her, we have to talk about her original toy tech spec card, because it is buck wild that, like, that was that they what they printed on that one.
All right, yeah.
Yeah. Don't look it up, because, like, we'll save that one.
Fine. you know me too well, James.
Yeah. Okay, so... Yeah, so next time on Beast Wars, a skirmish occurs between Maximals and Predacons for control of a floating island. The Maximals, for its use as a base, the Predacons for its disruptive capabilities. The Trigger, Part 2.
Well, that description, because I pulled that description from the little booklet that came with my complete series set. That description is much less mysterious when you actually see Part 1 first.
Yeah. Also, I don't know if the Maxwells really want to use it as a base so much as, like, they don't want the Predacons to use it as a destructive weapon. But I guess, like, you have to, like, when you're writing the thing, like, well, we got to give the Maximals a goal, an opposition goal.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, really, keep that at Pred hand. Okay, how do you do that, though? Quick tangent, just because, like, I was watching Supergirl last night, and they go to Mars because the white Martians are still fighting, and there's this psychic weapon that the bad white Martians are going to use on the good white Martians. Mm-hmm. And spoiler for the end of the episode, but good white Martians get it, but they hand it back over to Supergirl and Martian Manhunter because mm-hmm. they're like, yeah, we saw that thing in action. We don't think either any of us should have it.
Okay. Makes sense.
Yeah. This is kind of right. I'm like, you know, keep it out of Pred hands, but what are you going to do with it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways.
Yeah. So thank you for listening to the Exelon Archives. If you have any questions, want a guest on the show, or just want to talk about Beast Wars, you can reach us on Twitter at Exelon Archives or by email at exelonarchives@gmail.com. These things weirdly came off as tongue twisters. Who would have thought about that? Didn't.
Yeah, you have only yourself to blame. You know that, right?
Yeah, yeah. You can find this show on Apple Podcasts, Google Play Podcasts, Podknife, and Stitcher. Please leave a rating and or review because it helps people find the show. And check out our website at axelon.buzzsprout.com. Also, one thing I should highlight on Twitter is Dowd has been putting together a visual companion. So if you listen to the show and just like, like, what do you mean by an obelisk or a floating island or a bullet bill? We'll probably put a picture up of them. Also, we should probably, those could be on the list of things we could put up as pictures.
Yeah, no, I was about to write them down in a second.
Yeah. If you want to follow either of us on Twitter, you can follow me at @Discord_Inc.
You can follow me at Dowfac.
Right, and until next time, the Beast Wars continue.